Stay tuned for The Turning Point. Original Sin. Original Sin. That would be a great name for a band. Was there ever a band called Original Sin? Or if you're going to start one, you know, you have to give me some credit for it. Original Sin. What is the original sin? The original sin is... Now, everybody said, when I say original sin, what's the first thing you think of? Sex. Right. Tell me you didn't think of that. That was the original sin. The original sin was in the Garden of Eden. And... the original sin was disobeying God, who told Adam and Eve, you know, you can do whatever you like in this place. They're both naked, of course, but they didn't know they were naked. They, I mean, the weather was really good there, I guess. It was sort of like, I don't know, what, you know, some spa in the Caribbean was all the time. But they didn't know they were naked, and they didn't have sex. They didn't understand what sex was. They didn't even know really what they were. They just were frolicking around, lying down with lions and lambs, and I don't know what they did all day long. Maybe they played dominoes, you know, watched Oprah. They were just weren't really doing anything. They didn't have to do anything. They were born in a state of original purity and bliss. Total ignorance was total bliss. The original sin was God said, you can do whatever you like in the garden, but do not eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Okay? So once you eat that, then you're going to know that things are good or things are evil. You're going to feel shame. You're going to feel anger. You're going to feel lust, all these awful things. Now, people think then that is the original sin, was disobeying God, right? But it was disobeying God, and it's inextricably caught up with sexuality and shame and sexuality. You know, I don't remember the Bible exactly that well, but I mean, they looked at each other and they realized they were naked and they covered themselves up. Beginning of the end, right? And then they got thrown out of... Now, I don't know when they first had sex. There's no... you couldn't Google that, really. I mean, if you could look it up on Wikipedia, it's not going to tell you exactly when Adam and Eve first had sex. But when they were thrown out of the Garden of Eden, apparently they did have sex, because here we all are, right? Most of us almost... I mean, most of the world got wiped out practically from the flood, and they had to start all over again. But basically, it was Adam and Eve. And but when you first think of original sin, or if you think of sin at all... You don't think about disobeying God unless you're absolutely thoroughly religious, maybe even fundamentally religious. But you think about sex in that capacity, but in that reference. But here's a couple of articles that were in the paper. See if my voice is up to this. The Democratic candidate for governor in Kansas found himself on the defensive. These articles, by the way, were in the same paper about a week ago. Democratic candidate for governor in Kansas found himself on the defensive this weekend after acknowledging that he was caught up in a police raid of a strip club years ago. The candidate, Paul Davis, said he was not arrested or charged in the incident and accused Republicans of a desperate smear campaign. It's another good name for a band. Desperate smear campaign. All right. This is all free, by the way. I'm too old to make any money at anything anymore, and I was never any good at it. So whatever I give you, you don't have to give me anything back. Don't worry about it. Just a little credit wouldn't be, you know. Okay, so desperate smear campaign. I was in the wrong place at the wrong time, Mr. Davis said Saturday. Hasn't that happened to a lot of men, being in the wrong place at the wrong time? It's definitely happened to me. And you pay for it the rest of your life. Mr. Davis said Saturday during a meeting with campaign workers, nobody ever accused me of any wrongdoing. Come on. What's his name? Paul? You're in a strip club. That means you're evil. You should be filled with shame. You know, what do you mean accuse you of wrongdoing? Unless you were there inspecting the, you know, like, did you work for the Department of Water Supply? And were they having trouble or something? You know. Maybe. Let's see what the article says. Recent polling shows Mr. Davis ahead of the Republican incumbent Sam Brownback, who is one of the biggest lunatics, conservative crazies in the history of the Senate. And let's see. A lead based on largely. So he's a Mr. Davis is ahead of Mr. Brownback with a lead based mostly on Mr. Brownback's bad handling of the state budget, according to a lot of people. But word that Mr. Davis patronized a strip club in 1998, which was first reported Saturday in a small Kansas newspaper, could prove damning, right? Damned to hell, in a socially conservative state where there have been recent efforts to restrict or outlaw those businesses. There's still a strong strain of the Kansas electorate that looks at that kind of behavior, even going to a strip club, as very inconsistent with their religious values, said Chapman Rackaway, a political science professor, et cetera, et cetera. Politico, the website, drew national attention to the report, which was published in the Coffeeville Journal. Isn't that nice? The Coffeeville Journal, a small newspaper in southeast Kansas. I'd love to live in a place called Coffeeville. That'd be so much better than Manhattan. Probably in every way. Oh, except for the conservatism. What if I wanted to go to a strip club? The Coffeeville Journal with the headline, Dem Governor Candidate Present at Drug Raid in 1998. It was drug raid. Mr. Davis, 42, a longtime state representative who was the House minority leader in Kansas, declined an interview request Sunday, but in a brief statement said he was a lawyer for the owner of the Coffeeville, Kansas club and was in the building when officers arrived. He was doing legal business at the club. Now, what's he doing representing a shameful, you know, vile strip club owner? All right. You know, he has to answer for that. And he says, when I was 26 years old, I was taken to a club by my boss, the club owner was one of our legal clients. Mr. Davis said in a statement, "While we were in the building, the police showed up. I have never been accused of having done anything wrong, but rather I was in the wrong place at the wrong time," which sounds like a legitimate story, perhaps. I don't know. Mr. Brownback declined through a campaign spokesman to comment on the report. Of course, he's not going to smear anybody. They're above that. But they have people working for them who get paid a lot of money to do that. But the Kansas Republican Party's executive director, Clayton L. Barker, said the incident provided insight into Mr. Davis's character. Well, maybe it does. Now, here's the quote from the Republicans. Now the question becomes, as an individual, is he fit to govern? Because he was at a strip club one time and the police showed up and he wasn't even arrested, is he fit to govern? Is he fit to govern? If somebody discovered that he jerked off, you know, maybe there was a nanny cam, you know, left on or something like that, is he still fit to go to work that day and make sure that the state budget is okay? I don't know. What do you think? Let's see. The Democrat had revealed little about himself during the campaign and instead focused on Mr. Brownback's policies. Huh, imagine that. He didn't talk about his own lustful, sinful past, and he didn't talk about, Mr. Brownback's personal life. He actually focused on the man's policies. That's a sin in politics right there. An official with the Montgomery County, Kansas Sheriff's Office said Sunday that the incident report from the raid could not be retrieved over the weekend. You know, who cares? Harry Smith, now the police chief in nearby Independence, Kansas, said in a statement released by the Davis campaign that he was on a drug task force that raided the strip club. Mr. Smith said Mr. Davis cooperated with the officers and had not been the focus of the investigation. Sorry about that. Paul was there. That's Mr. Davis, the candidate. And as he said that night, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. So there you have it from the sheriff's mouth, the horse's mouth. At the time of my encounter with Paul, he was totally cooperative and not involved in any wrongdoing, which I believe. Also, we're going to find out later on if he gets elected, he's going to make him the head of the state highway patrol, that sheriff. But that's another story. All right, now, let me have some water here. I said, let me have, as if you're going to reach in here and tell me I can't have it. I don't know, hold on a sec. You know, on regular radio, there still is some regular radio that is in HD, LD, FD, LGPT radio, internet radio, satellite radio, regular radio, good old-fashioned radio we grew up on. When we were first on there, and I think that rule still applies, you cannot have silence on the radio. Even at Sirius satellite radio, you weren't allowed to have any silence on the radio because it threw everything off. There was a certain timing to the commercials and everything. But if you had a license from the government and you went on the radio and then you decided to do this on the radio on WBAI or WABC or whatever station you were on, you decided to just say, I'm going to have some water. Hold on a second. Bang. That's a good reason to take you right off the air, to take the station's license away. You know, I mean, you get a license to have a radio station. People on radio station talk, so you're bound to talk. Okay, so here's another article. I don't know if I can get through all this, but it says here, from pole to pulpit, a strip club and a church do battle, the battle of good and evil. How many paintings have we seen like that? The knowledge of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Warsaw, Ohio. Warsaw, Ohio. To shield, obviously, you know, founded by or populated originally by many Polish people. To shield churchgoers from the topless protesters, curtains are hung around the parking lot of the New Beginnings Ministry. The pastor, William R. Dunphy, said families, including children, have been entering through a back door. Still, the pastor vowed to go on with his vigils at a strip club that led to its dancers picketing at his church. I have no intention of looking away from evil, said Mr. Dunphy, who has read the Bible aloud and buttonholed patrons outside the strip club, the Foxhole, for nearly 9 years now. 9 years, man. He said he had talked husbands into returning home to their wives, I guess at least for that evening, or is the implication forever, and attracted out-of-state supporters to what he calls his ministry outside the foxhole, although he has not succeeded in closing it down. The pastor has fans, both fans and critics, here in East Central Ohio, a nub of the Bible Belt where Amish schoolgirls play baseball in long dresses. But many people believe a lawful business, i.e. the strip club, should be free from churchgoers pestering clients and employees, sometimes loudly, until midnight on weekends. Mr. Dunphy said he was acting on behalf of the victims of the foxhole, who in his view include the lost souls who, hold on a second, let's see, include the lost souls who gyrate around the dance poles, the wives of men who, by ogling, that is the men, the dancers, are breaking their wedding vows, right? So the victims are the wives, and they're also the victims are the poor girls who are wriggling around on these poles. And even aborted babies are victims that might, because they might result from the enticement of irresponsible sex as opposed to responsible sex. But in this long-running standoff, the lines are not always what they appear to be. Mr. Dunphy, Pastor Dunphy, is an admitted adulterer who was forced to resign from a church he had once led before. The strip club's owner, Thomas George, called the pastor hypocritical for telling me my place is breaking up marriages. It has been outright harassment going on 9 years, said Mr. George, whose club is a windowless boxcar of a building with peeling plywood sides. I decided to show them, you don't want it behind closed doors? We'll bring it right out in the open and see how you like it. And so half a dozen topless dancers with hand with hand-lettered signs began showing up at Mr. Dunphy's church on Sunday mornings last month. The pastor acknowledged that they cannot be arrested since courts have interpreted indecency laws to mean that female breasts are not genitalia. Really? You needed a court to figure that out? I could have found that out on Wikipedia. I knew that already. I knew that at a very young age. I think I was in my 30s when I discovered that. Really? We all know that, don't we? Female breasts are not genitalia and vice versa and can be bared in public. Really? That's interesting. I didn't know that. Let's see. Courts. I guess maybe that's gone to the Supreme Court. This is news to me that, I mean, can you walk around New York City with bare breasts and not be arrested? I guess you can. So you can do that anywhere. This is, I mean, can you go to a regular beach, not one that's set aside for the purpose, and be topless? I don't know. Interesting. Anyhow, in Ohio, you can do that. So here we are. We have the strip club dancers dispatched by their owner, and maybe they felt like doing themselves, being perverse sometimes, as these women can be. And this guy's a hypocrite, obviously, Pastor George. And so he now he's got topless dancers demonstrating outside his church. You think that might like be like check, you know, like they might pull back like they're even? No. At a protest, they're going to go on and on and on. At a protest outside the club on September 5th, Mr. Dunphy was accused of trespassing too close to the foxhole. He was trespassing too close to the foxhole. This whole thing is double, triple, and quadruple entendre, right? And was arrested. In response, the pastor filed an assault complaint against Mr. George, accusing him of shoving him from his parking lot. See, you know, once you start out with sex, it's like marijuana leads to heroin within weeks. And you start out with sex, it leads to violence instantly. The pastor has drawn supporters for his Friday night vigils from Illinois, Iowa, and North Carolina. What do you know? In an interview at his church, which has grown steadily since he founded it in 2001, most recently adding a 250-seat sanctuary, so he's doing good business, Pastor Dunphy, he said, there's never going to be a compromise. You don't compromise with the devil. Do we all understand that? You do not compromise with the devil. You don't say, okay, Mr. Devil, you can have 4 million souls, and meanwhile, you have to leave these people alone. You know, you don't compromise with the devil. You have to squash him or you have to give in to him. We have taken a pro, Pastor Dunphy went on to say, we have taken a proactive, I hate that word, a proactive approach to dealing. How about just active? We have taken an active approach to dealing with evil in our community, said the pastor, who has also demonstrated at gay pride parades in Columbus, Ohio. He cited the biblical responsibility of pastors to be watchmen on the wall. I don't know what part of the Bible that's in. Watchmen on the wall in defense of families and communities. But Mr. Dunphy denied that his long crusade connected to his own history of infidelity. There's nothing about this crusade that has to do with the fact that he was an adulterer and he was unfaithful. He's saving people like that now, but it has nothing to do with him. In 2000, he resigned as pastor of Black Run Church of God in Frazeesburg, Ohio, because of a relationship outside his marriage, the pastor acknowledged. It was a form of adultery, he said, one which brought him a great deal of shame, original sin. He said he had repented and asked for forgiveness from many people, including his wife of 31 years, Connie. And I have received forgiveness. This is apropos of last week's show. We were talking about, the Day of Atonement and forgiveness. So I don't suppose it was on Yom Kippur, but anyhow, the pastor asked his wife, Connie, for forgiveness. And he says, I have received forgiveness because of my past. I'm more capable to help other men. That may actually be true, of course. Don't we all see ex-addicts and ex-gangsters, ex-alcoholics helping other people who are on the wrong path? True, we do see that, right? And other people have done that. I mean, I've done that myself. Sort of like, don't do what I did. Let me tell you what I did. Don't do it. And let me help you not to do that anymore if I can. So that's fair enough. Mr. George, who is the owner of the strip club, and there's a picture of him. He's as sleazy as you can imagine the owner of a strip club to look like. You know, this is a pretty fair article. Mr. George, who founded the Foxhole in 1999, the founder of the Foxhole, founder and CEO of the Foxhole, was not forgiving. Oh, boy. He said, he's not a good Christian. He said the church's vigils, which he said sometimes featured Mr. Dunphy on a bullhorn, have run my business into the ground. He sought two legal injunctions to keep the pastor 100 feet from his building. Both were denied, et cetera, et cetera. And now he's gone on the radio. He's fighting back. He's gone on the radio and invited listeners to visit the Foxhole to see why it is the pastor's favorite weekend hangout. So, the idea of a topless protest at the church came after club's dancers, while confronting church members outside the club, removed their tops and saw that it upset Mr. Dunphy's supporters. So this is what's going on out there. And nobody is relenting. Absolutely nobody is relenting. And this is in the framework of original sin of Judeo-Christian. When people say Judeo-Christian, they mean also by inference, whether they know it or not, Muslim. Judeo-Christian Islamic religion, which essentially regards women, if you go all the way back to the beginning with the Garden of Eden and the knowledge of good and evil and sex. After all, it was the devil in the form of a snake, right? Get it? That enticed Eve. I don't know what they were up to, but enticed her to pick the fruit. So it was all the woman's fault. This is the origin. This is the original sin. It's basically, it wasn't disobeying God. It wasn't even sex. It was women. Women are the original sin. Women are sinful. They're responsible for all sin, according to a religion. And, of course, Mr. Dunphy, Pastor Dunphy, is clearly doing what's called projection. You know, you could call it that he's hypocritical. Yeah, he's hypocritical. He may also mean well. He may mean well. I mean, Maybe because he was an adulterer himself, and he understands what that's like, and he understands how awful that was for himself and for his wife. Maybe, although I wonder, he is going to be very active since he's a minister of Christ and God, and he's going to go out there and he's going to pick at this strip club and close it down. And by doing that, he imagines probably that he's going to close down all illicit sex in the world, as if everybody in the world didn't have I suppose it's different levels of it, lust in their hearts and lust in their, you know, loins or groin or whatever, you know. Everybody is filled with sexual desire up until a certain age, or I don't know. It diminishes for various reasons in people. But generally speaking, people, grown people and even, you know, teenagers, obviously, are filled with sexual desire. So the pastor is... you know, obviously, he feels by destroying the existence of this place, he's destroying the existence of sexual desire, when in fact, and shameful lust, when in fact, obviously, it comes from the pastor himself. Yeah, the fire down below. Sex, the original sin, and one that keeps burning and burning and burning. And so you got this Pastor Dumphy out there, who is an example of an American fundamentalist Christian. But, you know, not picking on the Christians. Why do fundamentalist Muslims, why do fundamentalist ultra-Orthodox or Hasidic Jews cover up women? And, you know, why are they covered up? Why do Hasidic women in certain sects have to actually cut their hair off and buy a wig? How insane is that? I mean, how insane is that? Why do Islamic women in fundamentalist countries, and we're talking about tens of millions of people, maybe more, maybe hundreds of millions of people, have to be covered from head to foot because men want them to? Because men want them to. And the only time they're supposed to uncover themselves is when men want sex. What's interesting to me is that between Pastor Dumphy and ultra-Orthodox rabbis and Islamic, mullahs and village elders and whoever lay down all these rules, it's always men who are laying down these rules. And they are harsh, and they cover women up. You know that old thing in a strip club where people used to yell, or, you know, like a Gypsy Rose Lee kind of thing. Men would yell, take it off, take it all off. This is basically, we're talking about fundamentalist men are saying, put it on, put it all on, right? Until I tell you to take it off. Women, you know that old phrase, children should be seen and not heard? Women should not even be seen. Why? Because they are objects of desire. And as such, they are sinful because they're causing lust and sinful feelings in other men. So this is the ultimate case of projection. Projection being that you think somebody's doing something awful when in fact it's you're the one who's feeling the awful thing inside you and blaming it on somebody else. You know, this is a classic psychological attribute of human beings. So really what's fascinating to me is that the strip club and the pastor have something completely in common. They are objectifying women. They are making women into objects of lust. And the only thing that's different, I suppose, about the strip club, or one of the things that's different about the strip club, is that they are not saying to anybody that you should be ashamed of yourself for feeling this or for wanting to look at women or to see women gyrating around with almost nothing on. But the pastor finds it shameful, just the way the people, the original old men who wrote the Bible, found it shameful that women, were the objects of original sin. If there was no sexuality to begin with, there wouldn't be a Bible. And why wouldn't there be a Bible? And there wouldn't be a religion, any religion. Why? Because there'd be no human beings. If people didn't know that they were naked, and if they didn't feel sexual feelings, then there would be no other human beings besides Adam and Eve. They would have lived forever in the Garden of Eden, so it only would have been them. And, the iPhone 6 never would have been invented. I mean, just imagine what could have happened, right? So these people actually gave birth to the entire human race. So is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. Every time I read the newspaper, I'm beginning to think it's a bad thing. I think God made a really big mistake when, he created the heavens and the earth. He created all sorts of animals. He created all sorts of, the oceans, everything, absolutely everything. Bugs, he created butterflies, you name it. And then he made his biggest mistake is he created human beings. And the way it's explained to me and to other people all the time, ad infinitum, going back forever, is it's not God's fault what people are doing. It's because people have, God gave people free will to do what they want to do. Oh, please. I'm so sick of hearing that. God gave people free will. What God gave who what? People act in a way and say what they want because they feel like doing it. Yes, you have a responsibility to be aware of yourself and to not do wrong things. But why drag God into it? I don't know. But that, I'm going off the track here. But adultery. The pastor here wants to save men from doing something which could lead to adultery, or which is almost like a precursor or on a continuum to adultery. Being interested in other women, feasting your eyes on other half-naked or completely naked women can lead to illicit sex, and that's adultery, right? He himself was an adulterer, and he said he committed a form of adultery, which I don't really know what he means. It sounds like Bill Clinton parsing sentences. So Bill Clinton committed a form of adultery. He didn't go all the way. He didn't hit a home run, right? He got to like second or third base or whatever it was. I don't know what the old phrase is. So, but adultery is not a good thing. It's not a good thing. Now, and obviously, I guess in European countries, in France and Italy, places like that, adultery maybe isn't seen, or maybe certain cultures in this country, I don't really know, isn't seen as so awful. But it's really an awful thing in a way. I mean, you're with somebody and, sometimes it could be artificial. I'm going to a wedding on Saturday, a very important wedding. And not my own. I'm already married. But you pledge to somebody. Now, maybe it's unreal to begin with, to pledge to somebody that you will be true to them. And, you know, part of the inference there is, or one of the main inferences, true sexually. You will not have sex with other women if you're a man, and other men if you're a woman, in a classical marriage. And the same for any other, you know, same-sex couples. You know, the part of being with somebody and pledging to share your life with them, for better or for worse, is that, you know, people get older, they're going to get sick, you might get tired of somebody sexually, temporarily. There may be some reason why you may discover. In fact, it's a complicated thing, obviously. You may discover after, you know, you thought you got to know somebody. These days, people live with each other, and for a long time, people have been living with each other. Before, people used to get married, and they hadn't even so much as kissed each other, or maybe that was the most they did. Then they discover that one of them has far more sexual desire or interest than the other. Could be usually the, I guess it's the man, is that true? Or it could be the woman. And then they're surrounded by all sorts of Victorian and other sort of rules and requirements and laws. And people discover that things aren't so simple sexually. And sexuality is one of the main, and the compatibility or incompatibility of people as sexual partners is one of the main reasons for trouble in a marriage, and one of the main reasons why people wind up sometimes getting divorced. There's a million reasons why, but that's certainly one of the reasons. And it could be a source of endless difficulty in an otherwise terrific marriage, where people have different levels of sexual drive or sexual needs. Anyhow, this pastor is... So adultery, not a bad thing. I mean, also his use of the word evil. His use of the word evil here. Evil? Let's get to that in a minute. And you notice, by the way, speaking of his own projection from inside, his own lust and his own needs, obviously this is a man, I would be guessing, with a very strong sexual drive, right? And he imagines that, as I said before, by suppressing this strip club, he's going to suppress his own evil sexual drives, because to have lust is an evil thing. Lust is one of the seven deadly sins. It's a sin, lust. But everybody, naturally, except, of course, as I mentioned before, if you're sick or old or taking certain kinds of pills or whatever, you have a diminishment or sometimes an extinction of lust, of sexual desire. But remember Jimmy Carter once? Jimmy Carter said he committed lust in his heart. That's something from the Bible, that you could commit lust in your heart, that you could lust after someone in your heart. I think that just means inside your own body, you feel lust for somebody, even though you never carried it out or even showed that you were interested in it. There's a guy like Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton, for whatever reason, I don't know what he does these days. I have no idea. Now he's a vegetarian. And, I have no idea, nor does anyone else, as far as I know, about his sex life. I mean, obviously, he probably hasn't had sex with Hillary Clinton since 1998 or 1999, going on at least 15 years or more. I doubt whether they have sex, you know. So does that mean that Bill Clinton doesn't have sex at all anymore? Clearly, there is a man with a tremendous sexual appetite. Now, whether or not he's a sex addict, and he's just doing it because, he's driven by some terrible psychological yearning that comes out in sexuality. But some people have a very strong sexual appetite. And I don't know if it's natural that human beings are monogamous. Has anybody ever done a study like that? I should know that, I suppose. But if I did know it, I forgot it. There are certain creatures in the world. Sharks, by the way, are monogamous. Interestingly enough. But are human beings monogamous naturally? It requires an effort of will. And doesn't everything that's genuine or decent require an effort of will? Because we're all pulled a million different ways. Meanwhile, this pastor has committed adultery. Is a terrible thing. Adultery is a terrible thing. It can cause a permanent harm to any kind of marriage. Permanent harm that could never be made up again. Or it can be, or as Pastor Dunphy says, he could be forgiven, but never, nothing will ever be the same again. There's a certain trust that is lost. So if the pastor is going to this club to try to prevent that, well, then good for him. But he needs to leave people alone. You know, he's got his church. The other guy's got his strip club based on the fact that men want to come and see naked women wriggling around, right? And there is nothing new about this. It goes all the way back probably to the Garden of Eden. I mean, after Eve ate the apple, maybe she developed a little wiggle in her walk. We don't really know that, right? Before that, they were just romping around like that was a pre-kindergarten class. So, but after that, after sex came into play, you know, maybe she was saying to Adam, like, Adam, you know, why don't you ask God for a raise? Because I really want to get some nice lingerie, you know? We don't really know what happened back then, and we will never know unless we get a time machine. And there really was a Garden of Eden, which, you know, anyhow. So it could be that it could be that the pastor means well, that he wants to prevent sexuality, because there is something that's, let's flip over to the strip club. It's sleazy. Now, by sleazy, do I mean, you know, that I'm infested with the idea of original sin and sexual shame? Yeah, of course. Who is not? Who is not? There are very, very, very few people on this earth who are not, who are free from a feeling because of the society they grew up in. Because, you know, I mean, maybe in the proverbial, you know, like, you know, desert island someplace, or the proverbial island somewhere out in the Pacific. There aren't any more like that, where people went about naked and had sex and felt no shame whatsoever doing it. Then there were rules and rituals and taboos and everything, but they walked around naked, and they walked around in various places in the world before white men generally and before Christians showed up. These people walked around, you know, naked and generally happy. Not feeling any shame. Shame is an awful, awful experience. Now, some people should feel, now there's a difference, I think. Somebody once pointed out the difference to me between shame and guilt. I'm not even sure exactly what that is. But shame is probably not a good thing. Guilt can be a good thing sometimes. If you do something truly wrong to somebody else, if you really hurt somebody else by word or deed, then you should feel guilty. And the guilt should provide a sort of a stimulus, a motive for actually not acting that way anymore, and maybe for correcting the original act or words that you did. Maybe to apologize, maybe to restore somebody to a position, you know, where you hurt them, you knocked them off of it. So guilt can be a very useful thing if you don't just sit there and experience it and don't do anything about it. Then it's not so useful. But shame, really? The Japanese have it terrible. Japanese, Germans, a lot of Victorians, the British, Americans have a terrible sense of shame. In the 60s, one of the reasons that people broke out in the 60s was they were sick and tired of all this shameful, you know, that everything you did was wrong. If you let your hair grow long, all of this is related to sexuality. You let your hair grow long, if you, you know, went around half naked, if you had sex, outside of a marriage vow, or you weren't engaged, all of this stuff. During my first marriage, I've been married three times, talk about original sin, and during my first marriage, I lived with somebody. We lived together for a year. And the whole time we lived together, I was not allowed to pick up the phone because my ex-wife was afraid that her parents, and this is the way, it wasn't her, you know, there's nothing special about her. I mean, she was just acting the way that most people did. This is a transition time. This was in the late 60s, and she came from a small community. And I was not allowed to pick up the phone. There was a fiction that I was not living with her, that she wasn't having sex before she was married. And this is the way it was back then. I mean, I don't know if people think this way anymore. Maybe people don't feel this sense of shame in America anymore. But obviously, there are large parts of the United States where Pastor Dumphy is in Ohio and many other places. Usually you think about the Bible Belt is the Midwest and parts of the West and the South, where people feel tremendous shame and disgust over sexuality. And it extends to every kind of sexuality, especially that which is proscribed in the Bible, in the good book. So this, here's the strip club, though. Now, strip clubs are sleazy places. Having said all that, they're sleazy. You know, when I say sleazy, you know what sleazy means. There's something, and it's connected to this whole idea of pornography, to the whole industry of pornography. And again, this is all about the objectification of women. In classic pornography, and almost 95% of pornography, including in the internet age, women are basically used and abused by men or by groups of men. And this is submit themselves apparently willingly. That's part of the script to being used in a kind of objective way by men, as if they were rag dolls or as if they were tissues that could be just used and thrown in the trash. It's a terrible, terrible thing. But there are millions and millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of men who will pay for this, who will log on to these websites and who will do all this. You know, I've done it myself in the past. Now, I try to examine I haven't done it in a long time. I try to examine myself. Why was I somewhat sort of addicted to pornography once upon a time? Because the pornography I was addicted to was classic pornography. This is from the 70s when I first, went into a porn theater. And then later on online, up until, several years ago, I think it was, why was I addicted to this in a way? And it was almost like an addiction. There was something about, I don't really understand voyeurism. I really don't understand what that's all about. But there's something about the voyeurism of watching other people have sex, and then you get into all sorts of psychological needs or psychological twistings where you had to watch certain people have certain kinds of sex. Like when you go on one of these websites, there's about 52 different categories for people who specifically want to see certain kinds of sex. And it has to do with their psychological needs, generally speaking. Or maybe their physiological or neurological, chemical neurological, orientation. But generally, it's a psychological need. And then why do so many men all over the world objectify women and want to see them treated in a harsh and demeaning way? Why is that? Why is that? Because they're afraid of them. They're afraid of them. The reason that men do this, the reason Pastor Dumphy does this out in Ohio, and the reason that the owner of the strip club provides all these women dancing around poles, and the reason that men go to see these women is it's pure lust. Men are fascinated by women's naked bodies, and that doesn't seem so bad to me. But there is something about you can't disconnect the continuum here between covering women up, and it's all fascinating to me. You cover all the people who cover women up, totally cover them up, because that's right out of the Garden of Eden. That's like the next generation right out of the Garden of Eden. Because women were responsible for all the troubles of the whole world. Even having terrible pain in childbirth is the responsibility of Eve. It's her fault because she let the devil persuade her to eat an apple off this tree and then convinced the poor man to do it. It wasn't his fault. So she has trouble with childbirth. Men have to work and women have to work by the sweat of their brows. If it wasn't for giving in to this knowledge of shame having to do with sex, if it wasn't for that, nobody would have to work. Right? We'd all be part of the 1%. There would be no 99%. We'd all be the 1%. And nobody would have to work. Everybody could do exactly what they wanted without feeling bad about it. I mean, except to actually violently hurt people. And there would be no problems in the world. People wouldn't have to work. They wouldn't have to get up and go to work all the time. You wouldn't have to get sick. You wouldn't have to get old. Nothing bad would ever happen to you. Imagine that. You would be living in the Garden of Eden forever, except that you wouldn't be, because if it wasn't for what she did, there wouldn't be any babies, because they wouldn't know that they were naked and they wouldn't be having upset. They wouldn't be having sex. But this this thing about people like Pastor Dunphy is interesting, because once on one of my radio shows back on BAI a long time ago, and this is when I was actually patronizing porn theaters. And why was I doing that? I think that for particular reasons of my own, I had a very bad attitude about women, and had to do with the way I grew up. I grew up with a kind of tremendous desire and love for women, but on the other hand, I grew up with a kind of antipathy towards women, if not outright hatred towards women, because of the way my particular house was, you know, the way I grew up in my house. And women had tremendous control. They had utter control over me when I was growing up. There were no men in the picture. They had utter control. And sometimes this was exercised in ways that I can't even describe on the radio. So later on, when I got the opportunity, I was kind of compelled in an addictive way, in a way that gave me a sort of sick, sad pleasure to see women objectified. This I admit. Later on, I think that I grew out of it. In fact, I'm sure I grew out of it, and I don't feel that way anymore. But this connection between people being attracted to the very thing that they condemn is also a fascinating thing. So when I was going into porn theaters all the time, and I had actually interviewed a woman who was the manager of a porn theater who had been a porn star herself and did live shows as well as films, I interviewed her, and then I got a call from Women Against Pornography. I don't know if that still exists, but there was a group in New York City called Women Against Pornography. And they, a lot of them were gay, but a lot of them were heterosexual, but some of them were heterosexual. And what they did was they set up like a mission, like Pastor Dunphy, and they set up headquarters in Times Square, right? So that every day they would be right there where the evil was to fight against pornography. They would pick it outside porn theaters. They would go on radio shows. And I had the woman on my show to talk about how disgusting and horrible pornography was towards women. And in a way, it really was, and it still is, right? It's all part of a continuum where men are scared of women, so they put them in their place. They cover them up. They have physical power over them. In a lot of places in the world, they have religious and they have legal power over them. And they suppress them. I mean, and at its least bad, women are, even professional women, are treated not so well in the workplace or paid less than men are. And that's the last civilized version of that. But Women Against Pornography. So where would the Women Against Pornography set up their headquarters? But right where the pornography was. So the Women Against Pornography spent their entire days and nights surrounded by pornography. Cops, you know, become cops because they want to, they have reasons. They want, and we've all seen the movies and read the books about why this is, but they want to go after criminals. They want to hurt criminals. They want to lock them up. They want to suppress crime. They are attracted. So cops go wherever the criminals are. Nuns go, will set themselves up in places where they're surrounded by quote unquote evil. There's always people who are so, now they can mean well. I mean, it's good we have cops, you know, who arrest criminals or else we'd be in a lot of trouble, right? But think about this part, that these people like Pastor Dunphy and, even psychiatrists and social workers and psychologists who spend all of their days helping people who are troubled help their own troubles. Now, this is done in a benevolent way. It's good that cops lock up criminals most of the time. Sometimes they get it very wrong, obviously, like you read in the papers. And it's good that the Women Against Pornography were shaming people who were patronizing porn theaters, because they were patronizing a terrible vicious way of treating women in symbolical form, which could lead to possibly, acting out in a real way. So women are the ones who are the victims here more than anybody else. But this is how it goes. People are attracted to the very thing they say is evil, and they spend their entire lives dedicated time, at the expense of their own relationships and of their own psychological development sometimes, fighting this evil. This guy, Pastor Dunphy, says it's his mission. It's absolutely his mission to do this. He was sent by God to do this. And it's all connected. Prostitution, pornography, strip clubs, all these things are connected. It's men, with their tremendous desire, their aggressive testosterone desire, to possess women, to have sex with women, to see women naked. And it's women who are employed in these industries. And I had interviewed a couple of these women when I was doing this. It was a magazine article, actually, I did on women in pornography, not women against pornography. And they had a kind of a pathological or a psychopathic quality, a lot of these women. They were clearly abused or had suffered some terrible sexual abuse when they were young. And it was their way of getting revenge on men, even though they were objectified and treated symbolically, of course, in these films, in a demeaning way. They felt like they were getting revenge on men because men were sort of like helpless addicts, and that's what they were doing. So here's Pastor Dunphy. The whole point is that he is projecting. Rather than being aware of his desires, and we all do this to some degree, rather than being aware of our desires, we put it on someone else. It's not my fault. It's their fault. I don't have any lust. I don't have any sexual desire. It's they who are causing it. They're causing it. Women are evil. Women are sexual creatures, and that can destroy all of our good works, and that could destroy all of our masculine plans. So cover them all up, or rape them, or make them dance around poles, and we stuff money, we humiliate them, and that's what it's all about, is the objectification and the absolute basic fear of women. And the idea is projection. Rather than be aware, as I say, of our desires, we put that on someone else and say it's evil. So the trick is to blame somebody else and keep it down and keep it hidden and don't ever let it see the light of day.
The fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. We'll all be saved from Satan when the thunder rolls. You gotta keep the devil. We'll be right back. gotta keep the devil